My role is to elect a chairperson for today. The committee chairperson is not in. She's not around the country. She's attending the commission on the status of women in conference in New York. So in terms of the rules, the committee is requested to elect a chairperson to preside for today. I therefore call for the nomination of the chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Member. In a second. Are there any further nominations?
No.
Honourable Sadi.
Thank you, Honourable Member, and thank you for nominating me to chair for you, to chair for today, while the chairperson is not here. I declare the meeting open, and I want to welcome everyone who is here. But before I go into the agenda, as a character of this committee, I would like us to introduce ourselves so that we know who is participating here. And then after that, then we get into the business of today. So I will start from my left-hand side here next to me, Danny. Can you introduce yourself?
My name is David Kekala, and I'm the committee.
Morning, everybody. My name is Mojin Amaro, the member of the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Thomas Yena, the member of the Portfolio Committee.
Morning, everybody. My name is Mojin Amaro, the member of the Portfolio Committee.
My name is Emma Moore, member of the Portfolio Committee.
Morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members. My name is Janine Hicks. I'm a Commissioner with the Commission for Gender Equality.
Thank you.
Good morning to very hard working committee. I'm Kamraj Ali Rudra from the Commissioner of the
Thank you. Tiki, would you introduce yourself? Because you came late. Thank you, members, for the introduction. And once more, I want to welcome the Commission on Gender Equality, who will be participating in this committee today to respond to the State of the Nation address. First and foremost, before I go on, can I find out, are there any apologies? Yes, Melissa?
Yes, apologies were received from Honourable, from the Chairperson, Honourable Di Chatelo, Honourable Peterson Matum. She issues with the Indians. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister, for the apology. The agenda today, we are going to have a briefing by the Commission on Gender Equality on the responses of the State of the Nation address. As we know that the Commission on Gender Equality is a Chapter 9 institution, which is there to monitor and evaluate departments to see if they actually committed to the promotion of gender equality and the empowerment of women. So we would like to hear from the Commission on Gender Equality as to what is it that they picked up as a body that is to monitor and promote gender equality. What is it that is picked up from the State of the Nation address, and how is this as a constitutional Chapter 9 structure going to see to it that whatever came out of the SONA that affects women, that affects the empowerment of women, children, and people with disabilities will be realized. So without any waste of time, I will hand over to the Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members, for inviting us. It is always a pleasure, particularly to deal with you when we have presented something that needs discussion. First and foremost, I want to reiterate the fact that we were delighted with the President's speech, because the President's speech tied in on so many issues that affect all of us. But we also want to know how they impact on women, children, and people with disability, particularly within the gender aspect thereof. The whole issue of it also touches on when you look at the talking about the building of infrastructure and so forth. I think the Commission needs to look at how the tender process goes, how will the many women benefit from that, and the number, and in terms of the provinces, because in the past, the CGE did do an assessment of the Kuha project and the Maputo corridor, and clearly the number of beneficiaries there were men. And our interpretation also of the President's speech is that the President was basically speaking or about delivery. He was also addressing government departments in terms of how is it that they are going to do their work. Therefore, the CGE takes it upon itself to monitor how may all these departments are going to ensure that service delivery is delivered in such a way that it benefits both men and women, and the jobs that are given are equally given to both men and women. The same goes for education. If you look at the analysis that we did, the analysis also looked at the numbers of illiteracy, the number of people who are illiterate in the country. Without any kind of doubt, the number clearly is comprised of women. Therefore, how is it? How is other basic education also going to deal with this? And then also, how is it going to deal with people who are disabled? Because the huge chunk of the budget has gone towards with the current budget speech has also gone towards education, and the same goes for health. We have to respond to the Millennium Goals in terms of the reproductive rights. So how is health going how is the health department also going to handle women's reproductive rights? That is, because sometimes we get complaints about some of the hospitals refusing or clinics refusing to conduct abortions, and we know that this is free. How do we deal with it? Or we have instances where some of the clinics refuse to help women who are in distress. So these are the kind of issues that some of them were addressed in the speech, were addressed in our analysis, but some of them are things that we also pick up as we go along, that these are the things that will need to be looked at. And I want to also reiterate the fact that from since I joined the Commission, the Commission has always tried to align its plan of action for the year in relation to the national government, in relation to the President's speech, so that we make sure that we don't deviate from government's needs, from government's objectives during the course of the year. Commissioner Hicks is going to do the presentation, and then we will also fill in where there are gaps. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Over to you online.
Many thanks, Chairperson. I see members have copies of the CGE's opinion piece and media release that was put out to various media institutions. And you also have a copy of our presentation. Thanks, Nelisa. As the chairperson rightly has pointed out, we here in our capacity as the Commission for Gender Equality, a Chapter 9 institution that bears the responsibility to ensure the protection and development and attainment of gender equality. I think a key mandate and obligation that rests upon us is to monitor policies and practices of the state, and I believe that's the very reason why the chairperson has called us in to ask us, from our analysis of stated policies, what are the implications for gender equality and women's empowerment. We're also tasked with advising Parliament with regard to our findings and research, so we really relish this opportunity to engage with Parliament. As Commissioner Meitzer has indicated, we have welcomed the State of the Nation addressed by the President. We believe that he has undertaken critical commitments and surfaced key challenges to unemployment, poverty, and inequality. What has been our role? Our role has been to bring a gender lens to the President's analysis and State of the Nation address, to consider what are the particular implications for women, what are the particular challenges that they face within this triple burden of unemployment, poverty, and inequality. Key to our analysis and response has been to bring the critique to the realm of departmental implementation. Our President has set the bar for the vision and his dream for South Africa, and our question is, can our departments deliver on this? And I believe it's critical to our monitoring role as a CGE to track this progress, and I equally believe that this falls also squarely within Parliament's oversight role in terms of monitoring state accountability and implementation by a department. So again, we welcome this opportunity. So our question is, do government departments understand the gender dimensions of the developmental initiatives and issues raised by the President in his State of the Nation address? Are they applying gender mainstreaming to their policies and their implementation? Because unless they do, we are not going to see women benefiting from the interventions and the promises outlined by the President in his State of the Nation address. I think it's also key that the President observed that 2012 is the 16th anniversary of our Constitution. We bring a critical gaze again. Are those guarantees of equality and non-discrimination fully enjoyed by women in South Africa, noting particularly some of the critical challenges that are encountered by women and their struggles in the social, political, and economic realm. As a starting point, and let's just, before we go into the particulars raised by the President in his speech, let's look at what is the challenge, what is the nub in terms of departmental delivery on these promises. If departments are to give full effect to the President's commitments and to ensure that these benefit women and ensure that these inform the departmental objectives and outcomes, what transformation do we need to see? We believe as a CGE that a fundamental shift is required at the level of the extent to which departments analyze the developmental challenges and needs, and particularly of women within our communities, and then ensure that their policies and their programs and their budgets are aligned to these particular challenges. We have a very real concern and sense that the understanding of gender equality has been watered down within our government departments. We are hearing more language of women's empowerment, social development, vulnerable groups. The shift and the gaze has moved from that political understanding of gender equality and the need to transform state policies and interventions to seeing women as a vulnerable category that requires support. So we're talking women's empowerment and specific social development projects as opposed to engendering our fundamental approach to the business of government. When we say we would like to see gender mainstreaming, what is it that we are calling for? We want to see that gendered analysis of the different situations of women and men. If we're talking about access to employment, if we're talking about access to resources such as water, energy, and housing, we have to have an understanding of the different challenges and needs of men and women with regard to that access. And then we have to design appropriate policy and programs to respond to those needs. We can't have a one-size-fits-all. Someone was talking about that this morning. We need to see as well, we can't just see policy commitments and some reference in policies and programs. We need to see budget allocations, because if it's not in the budget, it's not going to happen. A key issue that we find, and particularly through our ongoing monitoring, is the lack of engendered targets, the lack of adequate monitoring and evaluation measures, and a persistent unavailability of gender disaggregated data and statistics. Unless government departments have gender disaggregated data and statistics, they're not able to inform their policies and programs, and they're not able to track to see whether or not they're making progress against those dedicated commitments. We're not short on dedicated commitments, but we're not seeing numerator targets, we're not seeing data collected, we're not seeing monitoring and evaluation. How can we tell if our measures are improving the quality of life of women without these? In addition, though, I think the Public Service Commission in its 2006 analysis noted a persistent conservative attitude and mindset among senior government officials towards gender equality. We need to see appropriate skills within government departments. We need to see gender equality understanding and training to try and shift those patriarchal and prejudicial attitudes towards gender equality. For our next few slides, and there are only six slides remaining, we've picked some of the key promises and delivery areas outlined in the President's address, and we're noting, as our chairperson has asked, what have we picked up? What are the critical gender questions? What is the CGE doing about it? Okay. So it's the slide heading into the top of the page. It says, Engendered Challenges Requiring State Response. So let's start with the job creation and economic growth. This is one of the key shifts for economic growth outlined by the President. What are the implications for women? As Commissioner Mait said, identified, illiteracy levels, unemployment levels are highest amongst women. I think that is an undisputed fact, and our researchers and our analysts give various reasons for how this has come about, and that's the subject of another conversation. In addition, there have been numerous research processes, our Business Union South Africa, the Employment Equity Commission, the Business Women's Association, and recently the Commission for Gender Equality and our own employment equity hearings have revealed that women are prevalent in part-time, low-status, insecure, poorly paid work, and predominant in the informal economy. This reflects the gender division of labor and the low earnings that are typical of working women. In addition, women are grossly underrepresented in senior management positions, worryingly in both the private and the public sectors. The provisions of our employment equity legislation simply are not being abided with by both those categories of employers. And this is despite the fact that women constitute half of the workforce and more than half of our population. So within that context of existing inequality in terms of access to employment and access to economic intervention, what measures are needed? What interventions are needed to ensure that women benefit from the job creation and economic growth measures that our President has outlined? How do we prevent these gendered patterns of inequality and discrimination from persisting? As a starting point, we're concerned about macro policy frameworks again. New Growth Path, Vision 2030. Analysts from within government and outside of government agree and concur that these are gender blind. They don't speak, they don't refer to the situation and role of women within the economy, and they don't take cognizance of that within their planning and implementation. The President refers to new jobs, and our question is, are we going to see women benefit from this? And if you look at the shift in the new jobs approach, the bulk of these jobs are within the infrastructure development sector. Okay, this sector is traditionally male-dominated. If we look at the industrial, the mining, the engineering sectors that are referred to, these are male-dominated industries and sectors. And from our employment equity research and findings, these are the key offenders in terms of poor gender transformation. These are the least transformed sectors. These are the ones that are not addressing the scarce skills issue. When we ask where are the women, we're told, well, there isn't an adequate pool of adequately skilled women to draw on. Instead of seeing responses along the lines of contributing towards building that capacity, providing bursaries and scholarships, providing training, providing quotas, but it's also based on prejudicial attitudes towards the kind of work that women can do. When we look as well at the proposed the job fund that has been established, the president spoke about increasing access to loans. We need to see concrete measures put in place by our departments to make sure that women benefit from the job fund, that women-headed small businesses have increased access to the loans referred to by the president. And there are concrete measures that can be put in place, such as ring-fenced quotas. Of the loans that are made available, X percent should be made available to women-headed small businesses. And then measures put in place to enable those businesses and those women to apply, mentorship, business training, business management training. We're hugely concerned that women are not benefiting from broad-based black economic empowerment and, as Commissioner Meitzer outlined, state procurement opportunities. So there are no references to such concrete and practical measures within our new growth path and Vision 2030 documents. We welcome the proposed introduction of the Women's Empowerment and Gender Equality Bill, but that on its own is not going to leverage that transformation and inequality that we see. We've got employment equity legislation, and it's not bringing about transformation. So we need more coherent responses to this. If we move to the next slide and look at social developments, and this is again largely related to the infrastructure developments, again as our starting point, we recognize and we welcome the announcements made by the President with regard to infrastructure developments in the terrain of water, sanitation, and electricity and housing. We know that if women have greater access to these means, to these resources, we will see a transformation in the quality of life of women. Okay? In our own analysis of gender and poverty, we've identified that the lack of adequate access to water, to sanitation, to energy, these are key drivers that keep women trapped in situations of poverty. But unless our government departments again identify, surface, and respond to the engendered elements of these developmental and service delivery issues, are we going to see that increase and that change in the quality of life of women? These issues are engendered. We know that women are worst affected by inadequate access to energy, to sanitation, to water. They bear the responsibility within the household of trying to secure those goods for their families. Yet they're invisibilized, new word, in planning processes. Policies and budgets that speak to these key issues are silent on the particular challenges and needs of women. What are we doing about it? The CGE has undertaken numerous initiatives. We're currently awaiting the finalization of our gender and water sanitation study that will be surfacing key challenges and achievements within the sector. Last year, we convened a series of gender and energy hearings to identify the particular challenges encountered by women. And these relate largely to that impact on the economically productive hours of women and having to gather and harvest those resources, but also the impact on women's health in terms of using dirty sources of fuel and unsustainable sources of fuel. In that regard, again, we welcome the President's commitment to ensuring sustainable clean energy sources are explored and brought in, such as biofuels and solar energy, because if these kinds of resources are made available to women, we are likely to see women liberated from those demands on their unrecognized labor and the impact on their health. Finally, on this note, we note that the President has referred to a presidential infrastructure summit. We believe it is critical that the presidency seek to ensure and put in place conscious measures to ensure that women's organizations are represented and participate in this summit so that they can surface and address these issues, and they can ensure that infrastructure development and jobs benefit women and are then present then in the resulting planning. Moving then to education. Again, I think South Africa is to be congratulated. We have successfully attained one of the Millennium Development Goals. We congratulate the state on the attainment of universal primary education enrollment, the implementation of no-fee schools, the implementation of feeding schemes. These measures have ensured that South Africa is in quite a unique situation, that we have near universal primary school enrollment, which has seen young girls coming into the education system and ensuring the right of access to education for young girls. However, where is our cautionary note here? We are concerned that the focus is on enrollment figures as opposed to attendance. Girls are coming into school, but are they staying in school? What is the quality of the education received? What are the negative issues that impact on their education? And what are we doing about it? In the CGE's Millennium Development Goals study, statistics there revealed very worrying poor attendance by girls, high dropout rates amongst girls, largely as a result of issues such as the gendered nature of household chores, the obligations in the household impacting on young girls' ability to complete full schooling, gender-based violence, and particularly sexual violence at schools. The statistics are horrific. A recent Human Rights Commission survey has found that more than a fifth of sexual assaults on children take place in our schools. More than a fifth of sexual assaults on children take place in our schools. Inadequate sanitation at schools. This has a huge impact on girls' attendance, particularly when they're in menstruation, and teenage pregnancy. These are some of the key issues that impede girls' access to education and therefore their access to broader life choices. So again, the focus and the question, the intention, must be on our state departments, on the Department of Education. What policies and programs are being put in place? What budgetary measures? What structures? What policy guidelines? What training? What support to ensure that these issues are surfaced and addressed? In addition, we're concerned about the failure to include gender equality in the school curriculum. Again, there's a CGE study on this with some really comprehensive findings that we're surfacing and going to leverage with our portfolio committee and with the education committee with regard to how the Department of Education is promoting gender equality, both within its institutions, its structures, its policies, etc., but how this is infused into the school curriculum, because we believe many of the negative attitudes and perceptions and practices with regard to gender equality begin and are formed within the school terrain. With regard to crime, and we're specifically zooming in on gender-based violence, there's a mixed blessing here. We welcome the President's announcement that there's been a reduction in reported serious crime. But colleagues, there are studies and surveys that show us that serious and violent crime against women in the form of female homicide and rape have actually increased. So while generally overall serious crime statistics, reported serious crime stats may reveal that there's a reduction in crime, these forms of gender-based violence have actually increased. And if anyone is interested, and these surveys are actually placed for the committee's consideration, a very useful resource document developed by the Women's Legal Center entitled The State of the Nation, Government Priorities and Women in South Africa, which in many respects mirrors many of the issues that we've surfaced. In addition, a research report from Tswaranam Legal Advocacy Center entitled The Right and the Real, which provides concrete evidence and statistics that show that gender-based violence is on the increase. So we should not feel relieved by the President's statements that serious crime is on the decrease, because crime against women is in fact on the increase. In addition, key measures such as the Sexual Offences Act and the Domestic Violence Act, which are designed to address gender-based violence, are not being adequately implemented by our government departments. And the Tswaranam survey reveals serious failures and breakdowns. So failures in the implementation of legislated measures. We're seeing dockets being dumped. We're seeing the classification of crime being manipulated, gender-based crime. We're seeing inappropriate targets being set, inadequate monitoring and evaluation measures to track the incidence of crime, a reduction in the number of sexual offences courts, drop in conviction rates for gender-based violence, and pervasive negative attitudes and mindsets of officials. Of huge concern inadequate reporting. The Sexual Offences Act requires Department of Health, for instance, to report to Parliament on its implementation of the Sexual Offences Act. Do you know that it has failed to submit a single report in this regard? And Parliament has not taken this department to task for failing to ensure that the provisions of the Sexual Offences Act have been implemented. There's inadequate interdepartmental collaboration in court. The Department of Health and the South African Police Services are supposed to be collaborating to ensure that the rights of victims and survivors of gender-based violence are addressed. We're not seeing that in place. The Act calls for departmental directives and guidelines and regulations. These have not been developed. We should be hauling ministers in before us and DGs to call for explanations. Inadequate costing of measures, inadequate budgets. We've reported this matter to our portfolio committee and indicated to the committee that we're in the process of engaging with those social developments and the security clusters. We want to put these facts before them in this research and engage with them to find out what is their response, what measures are they putting in place, and we undertake to returning to these committees and reporting back on our findings and tabling recommendations. Last two slides. Access to land. The CGE argues that the gendered nature of access to land requires urgent attention. Access to land is a key issue that would respond to and address women's security of tenure, women's food security, and alleviate poverty. Now, the President in his address noted that 8% of the state land redistribution target has been attained. But when the CGE undertook our Millennium Development Goal study, this revealed that of land reform beneficiaries, men constitute 90%, largely driven by the non-recognition of the right of women to land in the period prior to the redistribution process. So this perpetuation of this persistent inequality in terms of access to land needs to be addressed. This historic issue of the recognition of women's title to land, particularly within rural communities. Women have to establish a foothold in the economy, and we need to see them being able to climb out of situations of poverty. Our land reform and restitution processes must deliver land to women in sustainable manners. Of concern, as identified in this Women's Legal Center study, the Green Paper on Land Reform is silent in this regard. The Commission for Gender Equality has undertaken analysis of this, and we're going to be making submissions when the bill comes before Parliament. In conclusion then, Chairperson and Honourable Committee members, as I noted at the outset, the President has set the bar for the nation in terms of the push and the developmental outcomes and objectives that he envisaged for South Africa. So we have welcomed this address. We feel that it speaks to critical issues that impact on women. The gaze now shifts to our state departments. It requires them to ensure that these entrenched inequalities, these entrenched forms of discrimination that I've spoken briefly to, that impact on the quality of life and livelihoods and survival of women, are adequately addressed, that they surfaced and they're addressed in policy and budgets. Because unless that happens, the promises outlined by the President are not going to be enjoyed by the majority of South Africa's population. As noted in the beginning, we bear a constitutional and a legislative mandate to monitor and ensure that state interventions promote the attainment of gender equality. I've surfaced and highlighted just a few of these measures that we've put in place. But we also feel that parliamentary oversight processes, and particularly the work of these committees, serves to strengthen this in terms of monitoring and demanding appropriate measures and responses from state departments to enforce state accountability in delivering on gender equality. So I think we can say from the side of the Gender Commission, we look forward to working with Parliament in these committees in this joint process of the desired shared outcome to see the lives of women transformed in South Africa. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. I've been listening to you very carefully. So the critique and the analysis of the State of the Nation address. But I'm a bit perturbed. from what you are saying and the analysis, just if nothing has been done as far as the empowerment of women is concerned. And the CGE was enacted in 1996. But up to so far, from what I hear, because these things, we are sliding down the scale rather than going up. There's a decline. I see a very bleak future. And for me, I want to say the Gender Commission, Chapter 9 institutions, and other institutions, like now that we have the Women Ministry. I know in 1996, when we were the first gender commissioners, we were crying for the Women Ministry with the office that we are having. So we have the Constitution that is very, very responsive to what needs to happen, or the vision that needs to happen to women in South Africa. The commission, it is there to monitor and to evaluate. So what I hear, the sense that things are coming from you, especially there's a lot of lamenting. I was hoping that you, as the Commission on Gender Equality, that has got to monitor and evaluate, you actually have to come up with strategies and needs as to say, when things are like this, if in 1998 or in 2000, according to the graph, we were at this level. Now in 2011 or from 2010, we are sliding down. What is it that needs to be done? For me, I see we need to have a coordinated, integrated type of an approach so that all of us cannot blame each other, but we can all see as to what is it that we can do, because I want to believe the State of the Nation address was just a framework whereby the President was actually saying, in future or from where we are, this needs to happen. And all the departments or the structures within government in South Africa have got to see to it that this thing happens. And the Commission on Gender Equality, you are the strategically, constitutionally placed body to see that what is in the constitution, whereby we want to see this country now settled, democratic and united, actually. So I don't want to go in because I won't go in depth, because mine is as a chairperson is just to facilitate this meeting. So I will hand over to honorable members. Before I do that, can I hear from you?
Chair, if the presentation came out as placing heavy emphasis on what has not happened, we really wish to apologize. There is a lot, as we all know, there's a lot that has happened. And I think you are right. We needed to look at what strategies are we going to put in place. Like I said in my opening remarks, because we need to look at what strategies are we going to put in place to ensure that the framework that the President has set is realized in relation to gender equality. Mm-hmm. And I also noted one other thing that we forgot to mention. In terms of the skills, in terms of the infrastructure development, because when I said that in the past the CGE did the study on the Kuga and the Maputo corridor, I forgot to mention that much as the skill, that skill is scarce on women, some the engineering and other skills, the skill is also scarce on black men, allegedly. So this is where the commission comes in terms of its own mandate on gender. These are issues that we need to put in place to make sure that when these jobs are created, both men and women equally benefit. Because we may look at women, but we also need to make sure that men benefit. And one other thing that we also forgot to mention is that we also form part of the
proposed Council on Gender-Based Violence that the Ministry for Women, Children and People with Disability is preparing to set up. And basically, it also covers some of the issues that Commissioner has raised, the integration of all the departments in ensuring that GBV is looked at holistically, like health, correctional services, subs, education, you name it. The objective of the council is to do that, but in this instance, we're just highlighting the disparities that exist. Though we also needed to inform you that this is a process that is happening. This is where we are working together to make sure that in our monitoring category, we will be able to say the health department has reported so many women who have been abused, and the police have done this, and so that we view the ministry as the key in terms of the implementation of our mandate, because we see the ministry, the ministers being able to influence all facets of cabinet to say, what have you done for women and children and people with disability? How much money do you have there? Which is going to make our lives a little bit easier. So I just want to say, I want to apologize if it came out very strongly. However, we know that a lot has been done, so a lot still needs to be done.
Thank you, Commissioner. And members, I will now hand over to you to make some input, clarity, ask questions. Over to you, Honorable Member Lamula. Then it will be you, Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, it will be you.
Thank you to the CDE for it.
Honorable Kekani. Okay, I just want to. So that they come in that order. And it will be you, Honorable Kekani.
Thank you to the CGE. I think it's an excellent presentation. Coming from a rural area, our rural women are definitely suffering the inequalities of not implementing what we need to. And I have worked through these documents. I feel the same. We as women must work towards achieving the goals that departments need to set. We must uplift women. You know, just a very, very brief comment on my constitution, my constituency, which is a very poor rural area and which consists of seasonable workers, where my women also want to partake in ABET. And then they do that for many, many years, trying to get through their matric. But eventually, there are no resources whatsoever for them to apply to the matric board to get to an institution like UNISA or to a university. So we are still caught up in that vicious circle of poverty because we cannot get to tertiary education, we cannot improve our situation, we cannot lift ourselves out of poverty. And most of these issues lies with women. If the women are educated, if the women can at least get more resources, we can lift them out of this circle of poverty. My question then to the CGE is, what are the main reasons for these issues not being addressed according to your analysis that you made? Is it perhaps strategies that do not get to goal set? Is it perhaps lack of resources? What are the main reasons why our departments that need to buy into this does not get to achieve our goal set? Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. My first question is actually on your mind. Maybe listening to what Commissioner has just said, I'm actually worried to say, okay, a lot of companies, private, state departments, and social bodies do not comply with the basic needs, and hence the problem is in the sense of the problem of the union. I mean, according to your mandate, you have certain powers to appeal and negotiate against. I'd like to listen to the lady in the previous place can just inform us how many have evaluated and monitored and evaluated, and out of those, how many have succeeded, how many have been investigated again. Because I agree with everything that I hear, and it's actually depressing to some extent. Because you know, I always say men build houses, but women build homes. You know, there's where there's love, there's warmth and all that. And if the woman is not empowered, you can imagine how many empty or cold houses we have, the health, the child, and all the other things that we have. But if there's no home, you know, people resort to crime and all these other things. So, if you can just do that.
Honorable Kitty?
Yes, thank you.
You know, at certain times it is difficult. The manner in which these things are done, whereby you want a report of the department or entity on the president, the state commissioner chair, and then their threat plan is not in our possession.
Mm-hmm.
It makes our discussion very difficult sometimes because we hear what they are going to say, but we always think they're about the how part of the whole thing. Because point number one, we are talking about the CGE with a limited budget. And how are they going to achieve all this with a limited budget? And also we are talking about the CGE, who is doing almost what the Department for Women, Children and Disabilities are doing, and are they working closely together regarding the monitoring and the evaluation of the department? And also, Chair, my concern more is on the human trafficking, because it's not reflected anywhere in the document, because it seems that it is on the increase in our country, and is going to be part of the strategic plan for 2012. And the NHI, National Health Insurance, since the legislation, since the Department of Health is dealing with the legislation, are they contributing to the legislation, or they are going to wait until the legislation is over to the September? I think we can go get clarity on those particular issues. Because if we talk about infrastructure, they're supposed to be part and parcel of the health insurance policy that is coming up.
Honorable Keka.
The first thing, to be honest, the presentation in its own right is very good, simply because it teases out very important things. Though the chair critique is also very important. So it makes the whole thing in a sum total very exciting. Before I go into my point, the first one, there's a girl in PE. I saw that on Daily Dispatch on the 15th of February. She got 3 A's, 2 B's, and she was brought up by an uncle who sells sweets because he's not employed at the station, radio station, and she couldn't go further because there was just no money to take her to take her with 3 A's and 2 B's. And she had to join the Angel Savings Suite at the Now the point is that when you have such natural talent, such a gifted child, who's rotting with all that brain, simply because our system is not able. I thought at high school, principal teacher, when you have such a child, will be able to advise and channel her to get the best resources to go to university. They asked her what you want to do in the article, and she said agricultural science, which is very important in the rural area. You're not going to run rural areas with subsistence farming anymore. You've got to do commerce, you've got to do it the scientific and the modern way, with equipment and right method of agriculture. And this girl is interested in that, but she's rotting, selling sweet bread. I would advise the commission to further that up and help that girl. But even more important, I think we need to take a campaign to the education department, and this would answer the question about resources. You can sit and lament again about resources. They are not going to be there because the understanding of this commission or this ministry is that gender issues are interdepartmental. They affect health, they affect. There are women that need health, that need education, that in all departments. So this department must rather facilitate or integrate activities of this interdepartmental discipline. And if that is the understanding, then we need to go to education and say all schools, especially in rural areas where there's no exposure, where people perhaps don't know where to go because they are far removed from where things are happening. There must be a system that says if there's a gifted child, don't waste it, channel it direct to the department, district, or whatever in the province, and she can get resources. Because you get surprised that right there in the rural areas, you get just a very beautiful brain that you don't know where it comes from. And if that is wasted simply because people are in the remote areas, then we're wasting natural talent in this country. That could move this country forward. I would ask the commission once more to make the 30% daily dispersed fees on the 15th. And I hope the child will get assisted. The second point that I want to make is indeed, remember this thing of GIPSA where it says we need skills to develop our economy and grow it further so that it can beyond 6%, so that it can create the necessary jobs. It was there a long time. We have never embarked. This is to the question that says, what have we done? Generally speaking, not just about gender. We have chosen a long time that to grow the economy further is infrastructure that we need to beef up and skills development. But if you look at our knowledge economy, I mean, up to today, we still produce students that are not graduates. 600,000 students in this country are not getting jobs. Though it is said that there are 900,000 jobs that are vacant because of necessary skills are not there. So we have not embarked in producing skills that are in the interest of the economy. Not necessarily capital, is the economy that will help us out. I mean, for example, if you have a girl today who is a mining engineer, already you are empowering women because that mining engineer is automatically going to become a mining manager. She's going to be in the senior position. And that mine might employ 17,000 people. And because she's right there at the top, she's going to help other women get jobs there. But if you don't do a groundbreaking campaign, for example, that if women were secretaries, doing secretarial or doing teaching, nursing, social work, and you then introduce them and tell them, look, there's no men and women job. All jobs today are open to everybody. They can become engineers, artisans, and all kinds of skills that are there. And if you don't do that, then they stick on doing secretarial because they think if you are a then they'll remain in inferior jobs. The way to beat all this competition is to train in this high skill occupation. Engineering, like I've said, if she's a civil engineer, she can design bulk infrastructure in a township. And if I've seen them being built as, for example, building double-story houses, because their equipment today, 12 women not carrying heavy stuff. But I'm just in this groundbreaking, we haven't campaigned, we haven't impacted on it. Women still think they are occupational nursing, at least as the best doctors, social work, secretariat. And we've got to tell them you can be a chartered accountant, and I've seen them do very well in that. It's nice when you are in a classroom and see a woman teaching everybody in math and science. And I'm surprised that you're not pushing those skills, because unless they have those skills, we can scream as much as we have, men will dominate as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks, CGE, for your presentation. But I think I'm going to share the very sentiments, issues that have been raised by honorable members of the presentation on itself. Because, yes, CGE is raising serious challenges that are facing women throughout our country, starting from your underrepresentation of women in private, both private and public sector, in leadership, in unemployment. Women are unemployed, poverty, and women not owning land, and women not having access to basic services. But one will ask the powers vested in the CGE, because I think one of their mandates is to monitor, to investigate, research, lobby, and educate and advise, and to report on issues concerning gender equality. But when you look at the presentation, there are so many things that you can ask yourself, the role of the CGE. I think we'll be expecting a general strategy on issues, on challenges that we are facing as a country, vis-a-vis on your mandate, the program of action towards addressing the challenges that you have raised here, as because we're sharing the very same sentiments. Thank you. The one other issue is the on page 4, you have also raised three or four questions relating to your new growth path and vision 2030, which you are indicating that they are gender blind. What is your responsibility as the CGE, together with maybe the Department of Women and people with disability? Your infrastructure development, what will be your contribution as the CGE? Your job fund, how will you influence other departments to make sure that they employ women and all these people, vulnerable groups that you are talking about. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Speaker. Before I hand over to the CEO to respond, I have one question for us. I have Commissioner. One sitting next to me.
Dick.
I have Commissioner
Hicks.
Commissioner Hicks. You said something like there is a conceptual shift from the way gender is defined. And what I know is that gender commission was brought into being in 1996 in order to protect and promote gender equality. And I think this concern that you are having is a very concern that I'm having. That now of late there are concepts that are coming up, women empowerment, that actually seems that now they are overriding the concept of gender equality. And I was a little bit perturbed from the discussion we had with the department, where now there is a shift, like we have to come up with a team that says women empowerment and gender equality. It's as if there is this saying that women have got to be empowered first before we realize gender equality.
Mm-hmm.
And we have just been in Norway as a committee. Some of us went to Norway in Oslo. And there they have what they term Gender Equality Act. Gender Equality Act and nothing else. And from the what they told us, we are far ahead as far as gender equality. They have actually achieved it in Norway. Now I'm very worried myself of this gender equality and this new concept now that are coming now, women empowerment. I thought we were going to have something very clear like Gender Equality Act. And then from Gender Equality Act, because now it talks of gender equality, we say we have to fight all inequalities that women and children find, and which actually make women and children to become children and women are vulnerable. Inequality. That is the focus when Gender Equality Commission was brought into being. But now we are talking another language. So I just want to hear from the Gender Commission, how are you going to synergize all those meanings that are coming up now, so that at the end of the day, we still have focus that we need to start with gender equality before we can go beyond. Because for me, with gender equality, we are coming from the general. And then now when you come to things like gender or the women empowerment equity, we are now focusing
on women.
We are now becoming specific. So how are you going to synergize this good issue that for me is coming up very clear? So I'm heading over to you.
Thank you. I'll give hand over to my colleagues to respond, and I'll also fill in where possible. Thank you, Madam Chair and Honourable Members, for your comments. I'll respond to a few of them and give my sense, and then would welcome my colleagues' comments. Just to start off with, in response to your opening remarks, Chairperson, I think we are by no means implying that nothing has been done in South Africa. I think we have done squarely what is the focus of our discussion today, which is to analyze in the State of the Nation address the key issues that have flagged what are the implications for women. So we're not undertaking a situational analysis or speaking to progress and challenges. We're saying what are the implications for women. And I believe we're sitting here talking as family members with equal concerns and coming from with our very different mandates, but with a common outcome that we're seeking to attain. We've got very specific strategies and recommendations, and I believe Parliament has access to all of these documents, our gender and land study, gender and water is about to be delivered to Parliament, our gender and education study is out, our barometer findings are out. So we've got very specific recommendations and strategies that we believe need to be put in place, and we're engaging. It's one thing to table a report in Parliament. As our Honourable Member pointed out, we have to lobby and engage with government departments as well, and to challenge them and push them to make sure that they address it. First of all, our Honourable Member asked about, and I can only speak my perspective, I'm not bouncing this with my colleagues yet, so why do we feel these kinds of critical issues have not been addressed in the way in which government is responding to some of these challenges? I think the starting point is that analysis from a gendered perspective. I think there's very much a thinking of everyone needs access to water, everyone needs access to energy. Whether you're a man or a woman, you need these things to have quality of life. But it's the need to take that a step further and say, what are the particular challenges that women face and that men face? Because we don't have a one-size-fit, we can't have a one-size-fits-all. We're not gathering appropriate data. We're not asking questions, how many women-headed households don't have access to XYZ resource. We're not breaking down that information. The government departments are not pulling that information in, and as a result, the policies and the programs they put in place are not responsive to the real needs. We're not seeing that. I don't think we can fault government in terms of commitment and stated commitments. You will hear ministers stating we want to ensure that women benefit from our anti-poverty measures. But then we're not seeing clear targets. We're not saying by 2014 we want to see X number of women-headed households having access to X, Y, Z. You know, if you break it down and you have specific targets and you have the data to track it, we're not seeing adequate costing and we're not seeing adequate resources being put in place so that those policy statements and commitments can be realized. The member's question around employment equity and the numbers and the extent to which we've used our powers, I think we're very pleased to say that we have come across very hard on both the private sector and our government departments. We've had two rounds of national employment equity hearings in 2010 and 2011. We've had hearings in provinces of KwaZulu-Natal, Northern Province. We're about to move into the Western Cape. We've had, and we can get the exact numbers for the members, but I would say in excess of 60 combinations of at national and provincial levels, government departments and private entities appear before us, and we've had to subpoena probably a third of them to appear before us. So we are not afraid. This is a CGE that is not afraid to use its powers. We are mindful of those powers. We are tired of sending letters of invitation or requests for information and having them unanswered. We're not going to come to Parliament and say, well, we tried to monitor that department and they didn't give us that information. We're going to use those powers. We have to do our job, and they have to enable us to do our job. With regard to our strat plan, Honourable Member, our strat plan is before this committee. We have our five-year strat plan that was tabled before this committee, and our current strat plan, we're at the end of the current financial year. I think we're presenting to Treasury next week or this week our annual performance plan, and that will again be tabled before this committee, and we encourage and urge you please to invite us in to engage with us on our strat plan for 2012-2013. We're very mindful of our limited resources. We cannot deliver, we cannot reach every child that is neglected, girl child that is neglected by the system, but we can and we will monitor and research. And we have wonderful substantive partnerships. This is how we overcome our budget deficits, is to partner with our sister Chapter 9 institutions to respond to issues raised by civil society. We don't do what the ministry does. We've got very different mandates. The Women's Ministry is a ministry for women, children, and people with disabilities. We're the Commission for Gender Equality, distinct and separate functions. The Women's Ministry is government's revived and renewed effort to ensure that it is delivering on its commitments to women, children, and people with disabilities. Our job as an independent institution is to monitor them as well, as government's best attempt to date to try and pull together and integrate and monitor and track its processes. And we have distinct powers. I don't believe that the women's minister can subpoena a fellow minister to provide her department with information or hold a fellow minister to account for failing to deliver on a program. So we are very aware of our job. We will research and we will advise Parliament. It's our job to do that. With regard to the feminist, Honourable Kikani, I fully endorse and support the statements that the Honourable Member has made. Again, our job is we cannot be in every province, in every village, in every school, rescuing every child or woman who has failed or left behind. We're not a service delivery institution. But when those issues get reported into us, that's where we track where's the system failing? Where are there systematic problems? Where can we advise? And I saw our spokesperson taking down details of the media reports, and I know he personally will investigate. Our honourable member on the same side as me in Siki, speaking to the new growth path and Vision 2030, we are engaging with those processes. We've been approached by Palama, which has had the very same set of concerns about the inadequate engendering of these documents. We're seeking to engage with the Planning Commission on their processes, and we will be undertaking a gendered analysis and set of recommendations to feed in to the Planning Commission in terms of how we can engender these processes. That gives effect to our obligation to monitor and research and inform. So we are presently undertaking that work. And invite you to engage with us on our program of action when this is tabled before Parliament, and engage with us and see whether we're adequately addressing issues such as gender in education, gender in poverty, gender in access to resources. And finally, Chairperson, I believe this is a struggle we're all facing, the shift from gender equality to women's empowerment. Women's empowerment is vital and required, but that political project of addressing and targeting systematized inequality and discrimination remains paramount. Otherwise, it's a very paternalistic approach, saying, oh, shame, we need to build capacity of women and train them, and then they can be more equal. We're saying, where is the system discriminating? Where are policies and practices discriminating and perpetuating inequality, and what work needs to be done? So I think we will have an ongoing conversation with the ministry. We do have a very good relationship with the ministry, as my colleague has pointed out. They've asked us to advise in the formation of the Gender-Based Violence Council, the National Council. They've asked us to advise on the legislation, and I think the chairperson makes a valid point in terms of the very name of the act. It used to be a gender equality bill. Mm-hmm. When the ministry started talking about it a year ago, mm-hmm. I went to consultative meetings that spoke about the gender equality bill. Mm-hmm. Suddenly now it's become the Women's Empowerment and Gender Equality Bill. And I believe each of us in our conversations with the Women's Ministry needs to engage with them on that. So many thanks for that point. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, I want to address the honorable member on the issue of human trafficking.
Yes.
Chair, I didn't say that. My apologies again. Chair, I did say that I was going to ask my colleagues to respond. I did initially. Okay. Okay.
Thank you. I should think my honorable chairperson has indicated that we'll be answering in sequence and before we hand back to you. I have to do justice to the honorable member insofar as your question on human trafficking. The commission has been working so hard on this. We are in the part of the steering committee on human trafficking, working with NPA, Human Rights Commission, and other civil association like Moroso Ngoloro on human trafficking. Certain issues, we cannot discuss them in the media because, you know, there are certain issues that we cannot divulge to the public before the relevant authorities take care of those issues. But those that we know of, you know, we work closely with NPA. And secondly, Honorable Gana, the issue of the young girl, you know, it pains me the most that, you know, you have raised that issue. It's not only in that area. It's also in various poverty-stricken provinces like Limpopo, Mpumalanga. You find such talents lingering around the street because, you know, there's no one to look for them. And that humane gesture by teachers that, you know, they used to assist before, it's no longer there. But I promise I can report back to the committee and you yourself that, you know, when I will leave here, I'll be on the phone. I should think I've seen an article on that matter. I will report back to you. I will do justice to the matter.
Thank you, Chairperson. In relation to the fact that why is it that departments do not do what they are supposed to be doing, I think if you look at what is happening in terms of the performance assessment of DGs and DDGs, there's no gender component in it. So it's not obligatory. They are not obliged to implement the ethos of gender equality. So I think it's incumbent upon this committee and the CGE to find out how do we engage with these departments to ensure that part and parcel of assessment includes the implementation and protection of gender equalities, to ensure that within their work it runs right through in the work. Mm. And then, Chairperson, the whole thing about the empowerment of women and gender equality, you see, there is a confusion sometimes because academics have tended to confuse the terminology gender with women. Gender is both men and women. It's not only one sex. And then also, I think you are right about the confusion in the Act. The Act has to be one thing. But I know that our government since 1994 has always had a component of women's empowerment. Because the whole thing about particularly women in the rural areas and women elsewhere, we've been socialized to believe that we don't have any skill, we are men subordinates. So that is where the women's empowerment comes in. so that when we meet, because men have always been our intermediary with the outside world, we've always relied on men. So in this instance, the women's empowerment that our government had implemented, if you recall, which I used to run, which our government had implemented, was to make sure that when you come to parliament, when you are here, you are already empowered. Because all along you were saying, how much are we going to give me today? Here's what I'm going to give you, buy this. But in this time you are now meeting men as an equal. So we need to separate that. We need to look at, we continue with women's empowerment. Because, as I said, we've been socialized differently. Sometimes we don't achieve the whole thing of gender implementation and gender equality. Because we women become our own enemies.
Mm.
We say, women are not supposed to do that. We say it ourselves. So the empowerment comes into, maybe we should say the consciousness, maybe we should now adopt the word consciousness, awareness raising, our empowerment and awareness raising. Because we need to be aware of the whole thing. So that is where it comes in. And then in relation to the NHI, we were still trying to have a meeting with the minister, because on our theme with HIV and AIDS, we've also have the issue of maternal death and women's reproductive rights and all that. So the meeting, I don't know whether it will happen during this finance year or it will happen in the new finance year. We are still trying to pursue that to determine how the whole thing is being done. But as I said, I am glad to say that through the committee that the Women's Ministry has set up, we are also looking at how GBV is looked at in terms of that. And then again, there's another thing that we also need to all of us think of. That is 90% of African families are female headed. 90%. So whatever study we do, we need to make certain that we take that into cognizance. Because most of us here were brought up by women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the men were gone, either were working away from home or they'd gone and started a life elsewhere. So whatever is done in terms of empowerment and gender equality, let's look into that. And because there'll be very need. We'll need to reinforce what the others already have and then what the others do not have. But we must make sure that in the quest of attaining and implementing gender equality, we do not alienate men. Because historically, some men were at the bottom of the ladder. So if we don't move in tandem with them, we are going to cause serious conflict in the country. So I just wanted to say that is why we have the Women's Ministry that looks after women, children, and people with disability, and the Commission on Gender Equality that looks at the needs of both genders. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Mason. I would give from each honorable member a bite. Anyone who wants to have a bite before I close? Honorable David.
Thank you. They were hiding those girls in that hotel. I think there are so many, even in Dobe, even maybe in Lumpanzin, everywhere, you know. Children trafficking. Can you please monitor? You work so hard in the sugar cane killing. You know, you monitor that case until everything goes well. You can just maybe monitor that case of the children trafficking. You touch everything. You touch even the crime, you know. But they talk about the crime that is planning, eh? But the crime, in women are still dying, you know. Children are still dying in their houses, in the streets, even in women in schools, everywhere, you know. It's really alarming, you know. If maybe as a monitoring institution, it can just monitor all those things, that maybe things they can be better. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I want to clarify something. I think Commissioner Heath, maybe she did not get me right when I said it's a pity that when they come to do the report from the President, we do not have the strike plan for 2012 in front of us. That's what I was trying to say. Because it is very important that we understand how part of how are they going to implement this report that they are taking. So that was my concern, point number one. And secondly, Chair, I think as much as that they are a monitoring evaluation institution, I think all of us in the committee were concerned about the mandate of the department. Because the mandate of the department is also to monitor and evaluate. And they were all concerned for a long time because we thought that when we have this department, it will be a delivering tool for women. But unfortunately, it is not. So when we talk about, we understand they have different mandates. But the work that they are doing is almost the same. They are going to monitor and evaluate all the departments like they are going to monitor the legislation. So that's what we are trying to say. Because so honestly, we had a very, very serious problem that the department is not going to deliver the money to monitor and evaluate. And we always ask ourselves, why should we have this department then? Because the thought is going to bring, I'm talking now on behalf of women, council, we heard that the department is going to bring change to women, because what is important, we need a vehicle that is going to bring about change to women, which is not happening. It's still going to monitor and evaluate, but it's very difficult to decide on the budget of another department. That's a reality. So that is my concern.
I'll give over to the commission for
I think Honorable Kekan has absolutely got the finger on the button there. If we're talking about the gender division of labor, and if we're talking about male domination of the engineering sector particularly, I mean, that was a classic example. You could talk about auditing, accounting, finance, the same pattern prevails. I think the starting point is schooling, which is why we're so concerned about the lack of a gender policy within the Department of Education. And this is one of our recommendations that we're going to be taking forward with that portfolio committee and that ministry. We need to see within schools young girls as well being nurtured and supported and encouraged to take hard science subjects so that they can progress to that kind of career and to that kind of studying. We need to see bursaries and scholarships made available and ring-fenced. If we're told X millions made available for bursaries and scholarships, let's have a ring-fenced amount, and there's an obligation then on the department to go and find those girl children with potential. Because unless we ring-fence and set a target, then you're not going to see that obligation on the department to deliver that number. But also equally companies. It's not good enough, we believe, for a company to say, well, we'd like to appoint more women, but there are no women applying for these jobs or there are no women qualified.
Mm.
We've seen some entities being very proactive and putting learnerships in place, assisting people come in. And when we look at what are the measures, it's recruitment. They need to have recruitment drive to find those women. They need to promote within the company the young women with potential instead of leaving them down there. They need to send them on the qualification and training that would qualify them for that promotion. So I believe there's an active responsibility both in our education system, but also those sectors themselves to bring about that transformation. And I share the Honourable Member's concern and tears about issues of teenage pregnancy, and I think we absolutely take to heart your appeal to us to continue monitoring those cases. We certainly are going to be monitoring. We work very closely with, and it's the International Commercial Crimes Unit in Durban that's dealing with trafficking, and we monitored a previous case of Thai underage girls and Thai women who were brought in. But I think we are, if not more, concerned about our own young girls who trafficked across the borders of provinces in South Africa and put in those situations. Young women brought from Limpopo province, from Northern province, from the Eastern Cape, families so proud that this child's going to take their household further, only to find that they trapped there. So we will actively, and I've made a note to myself, I come from the Durban office, I'm going to make sure that we are there in court and monitoring that case. And the Honourable Member's comments absolutely noted in terms of the strategic plan. I think the timing's a bit unfortunate in that we're just putting that together now. But I don't think we'll forget this conversation. We will see each other again when you engage with us on the strat plan. Further to say, on the issue of the Women's Minister's mandate, the CGE has long sought a role clarification workshop with the Women's Minister. We've set dates. The Minister's unfortunately not been available to have that conversation about our distinct mandates, but those opportunities for collaboration, because I agree there is a need for clarification. And then the final comments on the Department of Health and Sexual Offences. The specific failures that have been picked up in this report is the Department of Health, amongst others, is obliged to submit to Parliament on an annual basis a report on the implementation of the Sexual Offences Act. They have not done so. Okay? They're obliged to put in place regulations to have standardized responses to sexual offences. They have not put the regulations in place. They're obliged to develop training courses for the implementation of the Sexual Offences Act and table their training course in Parliament and submit a report on an annual basis on the implementation of training. They have not done that. In their annual report, they will talk vaguely to training, but it's some places it's a one-day training, some places it's a five-day training. Sometimes it's accredited, sometimes it's not, and it's not rolled out coherently. And again, the costing and budgeting. We're very concerned, for instance, about the Tutuzela care centers. There are too few of them for a starting point, but they donor funded. We need to see provisions for Tutuzela care centers in our government's budget. What happens when the Americans or the Europeans take their money to Bosnia or somewhere else? Are we going to close the Tutuzela care centers? That's an integrated response from health to make sure that there is the necessary support to victims of gender-based violence. We need to see it in our departmental budgets. Those cannot be donor-funded responses. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say that we do take cognizance of the concerns that have been raised here, and we'll factor them into our POA, as we say, because this is it's a continuation of the work that we have been doing. Honourable Member Nxumalo, we are also concerned about teenage pregnancy. We are also concerned about sexual harassment of young girls at school, because some of the reason why they drop out, it's because of sexual harassment. But we are equally concerned that, again, members of the public sometimes do not raise any issue when a child or their daughter is having a relationship with a teacher in a school. So, again, this is a moral issue. It's something that we at the CGE can talk about, but if communities don't do anything about it, there's nothing we can do apart maybe from the fact that maybe we can lay a charge of a statutory rape against the teacher. And then also violence in the home that has increased. It's a very, very serious issue. Unfortunately, again, even if you were to talk to the police, they will tell you, you can't have a policeman in each and every house. It's a very, very serious issue because most often, again, we know that women withdraw charges because of social pressure, poverty, and dependency on the men. And then ultimately that leads to their own death. What mechanism can Parliament put in place in a situation where a case has been withdrawn? So we can maybe make a proposal as a commission. But again, I am hoping that through this council that the Women's Ministry is working through, we will be able to come up with something. And so far, there are many brilliant suggestions that are coming. And so I'm certain that the document will be discussed here at some point before the launch or something. But you will see that things are beginning to change in terms of the interconnectedness of how government and the CGE need to deal with GBV. There are things that we can effect change on and provide some kind of influence. But there are those that are going to take a long, long time because, I mean, we know that some of the women would say, Hanchabikur Hankat, you see. So that kind of mindset we also need to work on. So there are so many chairpersons, but we will get there. I think together with the team and civil society and our mandate and other Chapter 9 institutions, I think we will ultimately get there. Thank you, Chair.
I needed to highlight something which Honorable Kegana raised. In our EE hearings, that's what you have raised, issues of skills development, empowerment of women, and bringing the inequalities being addressed in those EE hearings. I just hope, you know, we'll send you an invitation to come and listen to what we'll be doing here in the Western Cape. And also, through our intervention, we want to give credit to the Department of Basic Education that's supplying sanitary towels to the school, because it was issues of enrollment vis-a-vis attendance. During that period when girls were menstruating, they were not going to school because some are from poverty-stricken homes, some are orphans, there's no one to supply them. But the Department of Education, they've reported to the Gender Commission that they're doing that. And I was invited by the Office of the Premier. The Commission, excuse me. Okay, lastly, we have seen an improvement in so far as, you know, Mama Action in Gauteng. I attended one of the prize giving ceremonies, whereby 1,200 girls, the Honorable Premier. The Honorable Premier, I'm sorry, Premier Nomuna Mkonya, she gave 1,200 buses were given to girls to do some of the courses which you are raising, Honorable Kekan. So it was a big achievement, and these girls, some of them are from Kutsong areas where the schools attended is low. So it's a step in the direction. So I'll try to collect information from various provinces to see how far we're advancing in terms of these issues.
Sorry, Chair, thank you very much. Just one comment. I think that the committee members raised an important point in respect of the National Health Insurance. There is a policy paper that was published late last year. I think what the Department of Health is doing is excellent. They're looking at overhauling and transforming the way healthcare services are provided in terms of funding. And that is necessary in our democracy, because it was one aspect that this country didn't give a lot of attention to. And the saying goes that an unhealthy nation is a sick nation. So we need to get our health care structured properly. Mm-hmm. And what we found as a CGE was that policy paper is looking purely at the funding aspect. But it needs to transform by looking at how we address healthcare services to women as well. It definitely was gender blind. Because apart from looking at the fact that 75% of the population in the public sector is funded by 25% of the comparative budget of the private care sector, where you get 75% of the budget on healthcare being spent there, but it only services 25% of the population of Africa. In other words, what government found was that we have an elitist healthcare system. And that's the pitch of that policy at the moment. But as far as we were concerned, that is an important consideration. But also, if you look at the deeper, when you drill down deeper into our country, you find that you have the deep rural areas, you get people who don't know, you know, what ailments they are faced with and what healthcare services they can access and how they can address the problems that they're faced with. For example, TB to us, we'll know in our urban areas that it's curable, but in the deep rural areas, they may not even know that. So aspects like that, and also the way products are tailored. For example, if a woman is suffering from breast cancer, the health insurance will generally tell you that it's cosmetic surgery. And it is not. So the CGE, in our submission, highlighted these aspects. You just don't look at funding as the primary concern. You look at how the patriarchal system tailored products to service men and ignore the needs of women. So that was a pitch of our submission to the Department of Health. We told them to restructure the policy, look at it properly. You're doing women a great disservice.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Before I want to say. If we still, we have a, there used to be a, an office here in Cape Town, the Gender Commission. Are you still there? Or are you there? Oh,
I'm sorry.
Oh, I would like to say you are just a meter away, I think. Our doors are open. You can come and you can interact with any of the commissioners or all the honorable members on any issue. Let there be an open door type of working together with that office. We'd like to have the same, but I know that we have offices in the provinces. And honorable members have got their constituency offices in the provinces. And I think we can work together with the honorable members. And by so doing, I think we are all definitely going to change the lives of women, children, and people. And I would like to say the Gender Commission, we have the one of your roles, which is awareness. We used to hear you over the radio during those years. Why would be my day, round about 10 o'clock in the evening, there educating the community. Where we started by this concept, gender equality. I can see that the gender equality concept is losing meaning. So I would ask the Gender Commission to go back again on the, use the radio, the community radios, use the radios, together with the parliamentarians in their constituencies. We can work together so that we make the community aware of these issues. And I want to believe it's only through education that we can actually empower the community or the society. So I would like to say thank you so much, and I would like to congratulate the commissioners that have come on board. And I think the Gender Commission, see, work together with the department and don't get tired of coming up with road classification. Maybe you can even go to an extent of trying to show the department what is it when you monitor and evaluate. But I still have a concern that up to now we still don't have the gender equality monitoring tool. And I think we need that tool so that the department can know what is it that the indicators. Can know exactly what it is that you mean when you say you want to monitor, you can know the objective. And by so doing together, you can. But when I say you must work together with the department, I don't say you must swallow too, because you are independent. So you must do your job as an independent trust, not as a department. Because once you become swallow team, you are going to lose focus. And once you have the gender equality that you have.
I'm not so good.